Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN New York 98.7.
Hey Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
It's short third. Castro has it. Spins, fires. A perfect game!
Ten years ago today, perfect game, Roy Halladay pitched for the Phillies against the Marlins in Miami. And tonight at 7, a special edition of ESPN's E60, Imperfect, the Roy Halladay story. And I remember the old lead from Don Larson's perfect game, the imperfect man pitched the perfect game. And when Halladay pitched this perfect game, we didn't realize he was imperfect. But our next guest can tell us a little bit more. John Barr is a correspondent on this E60 project, and he joins us now. John, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you making some time for us. So what was imperfect about Roy?
Well, there was a lot. I think one of the things we discovered is that there was a side of Roy Halladay that, you know, the public certainly never saw, and even many of those close to him were unaware of. He is a guy who dealt with some real life issues off the field. He battled depression, he battled anxiety, he battled addiction, and he battled all of those things for years, including the last few years of his career with the Phillies.
I worry about one thing, though, because I've read these stories. You know, a lot of it is painkillers because, you know, a pitcher goes through a lot of pain. John, aren't the teams complicit? Didn't somebody actually give these pills to Roy Halladay?
Well, not according to his wife. He didn't get the pills initially from a team doctor. According to Brandy Halladay, Roy's prescription pill use and later misuse and abuse began in the spring of 2012. You remember his first year in Philadelphia was that magical year where he threw the perfect game you just mentioned, but he also threw a no-hitter in his first ever postseason appearance. You know, he won 20 games that year. He was the first Phillies pitcher to win 20 games since Steve Carlton. He was as good as he could be. He won the National League Cy Young Award. Couldn't possibly top that, but he had a pretty darn impressive 2011, and then he just fell off a cliff in 2012. That's when the injuries set in and when his body really started to break down. And it was during that spring training in 2012 that he took prescription pain medication for the first time, and his wife and another source told us that he got the pills not from a team doctor but from a doctor in Florida to whom he paid cash, a doctor who was recommended to him by a Phillies teammate. And it was in that off season that he came home when he got severely ill and had flu-like symptoms, and he was confronted by his wife, and he essentially told her at that moment, he said, "Look, I know you don't approve of this, but I took these pills in order to pitch." And what was going on is his body was essentially detoxing. He was chemically dependent on the medication at that point.
Did you happen to find out if the teammate that sent him to that doctor knew the extent of Roy's problems?
We did not. That is a piece we do not have. And I can tell you that the Phillies, well, from a team perspective, I know that the Phillies became aware of Roy's problems more so in the 2013 season. His prescription pain pill use and abuse continued into that season. And again, I should underscore the point. You know, this wasn't a guy who was taking these pills to get high. He was taking these pills in order to compete. He was dealing with severe back pain. We now know that he had pars fractures in his back, which essentially are stress fractures. It's the case that the guy pitched in that 2012 and 2013 season with a broken back. That led to shoulder problems and ultimately shoulder surgery and a couple stints on the disabled list in 2012 and in 2013. But, yeah, the guy was pitching with a broken back, and he was such a, you know, he's getting paid $20 million a year. The Phillies were trying to get back to the World Series. He was trying to get to his first World Series. couldn't walk away from the game of baseball, and he was doing everything he could to get out there every fifth day, and that included taking pain medication.
Correspondent John Barr, who's part of this this program tonight, E60 Imperfect, the Roy Halladay story, which will debut at 7 on ESPN. You also reveal new details about multiple trips to rehab. So, John, were those trips to rehab while he was a player?
Yes and no. I mean, he was still an active member of the Phillies, but he was done playing.
It's amazing that this is the first we hear about it. I mean, nobody from the media ever found out about this.
No, he would look. This is a part of his life he kept very private. You know, in 2013, Kyle Kendrick, a pitcher on that Philly staff and a good friend of Roy Halladay's, and another player went to someone with the team, and they said, "Look, he's not right. Something's wrong with Roy." And other people could see it. You know, Rich Doobie, the former pitching coach, talked about how he saw him glassy-eyed. You know, I've talked to other members of with the Phillies who talk about how, you know, his pupils look dilated. You go back and look at some of those interviews, and you'll see some of them tonight, where his speech is slow and labored, and, you know, in a few of his final starts where he really struggled, he was sweating profusely in temperatures that weren't really that hot. And, you know, you look back on all of that now with clarity, but it was after that. So Kendrick and another teammate go to the Phillies, and the Phillies had, in Rich Doobie's characterization, a player who Halladay respected tremendously talk to him about his drug use. And according to Doobie, he appeared to improve, at least around the team. But to Brandy Halladay, she saw a different Roy at home. And when he came home that offseason, once again, his body had become chemically dependent on these pills, and he knew he needed help. And so he checked himself into a rehab facility in West Palm Beach for the first time in October of 2013. And so he was still a Philly. He didn't retire until December of that year.
John, what's curious to me, so the family knew that there was an issue. Why did they allow him to fly?
Well, that's a great question. You know, Brandy Halladay was really conflicted on that score. Roy's father, Roy Sr., is a corporate pilot. He's got 25,000 hours, and he taught Roy how to fly before he taught him how to pitch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he knew well that Roy, it wasn't until later that he discovered that his son had sought professional treatment to try to deal with his painkiller addiction. And, you know, he was concerned about him, and he asked him about it. He said, "What's the deal with these medications? Are you still taking these medications?" And Roy assured him that he wasn't. Brandy knew differently. And, you know, the reality is Roy struggled in retirement, according to Brandy. You know, he appeared lost and just didn't know how to self-identify as something other than a baseball player. And flying was one of the things he was always passionate about. And so she sort of balanced her concerns about where he was mentally and with the pain medication that he was taking with her desire to see him pour himself into something that he was passionate about. And so she acquiesced, and she sort of pushed down her concerns about him flying. And ultimately, we now know he had a combination of medications in his system on the day that he took his final flight.
So, in short, before we finish up, John, is there a belief that plane crash could have been a suicide?
No, listen, the family is adamant when they say that they do not believe that that's the case. Okay. You know, Brandy Halladay's position on that, and it has come up in a few different media accounts, is that, you know, anybody who would suggest that sure as hell doesn't know Roy Halladay. You know, he adored his boys, and, you know, in her characterization, at that stage in his life, he had started to figure some things out. You know, he was in a better place psychologically. So she just doesn't buy into that. And I can tell you that we talked to a lot of witnesses who spoke with federal investigators of that crash, one of whom was a fisherman who saw Roy's plane impact the water. And he was very clear with me that as that plane was coming down the last time towards the Gulf, that the nose was coming up as if the pilot was trying to pull up. Gotcha. So if you take that on face value, that does not suggest that's the actions of a man who was trying to impact the water.
And final thing, John, how did you get the family to speak to you on camera? What does this serve for them to do?
Well, Brandy Halladay was very intent on speaking to us if she could have a purpose behind the interviews. You know, she wasn't going to lay bare her most private, painful moments without having some sort of intention. behind it, positive purpose behind it. And her goal is to deliver the message loud and clear that it's okay to ask for help, that you should never be looked down upon for asking help, and that, you know, even Hall of Fame pitchers like Roy Halladay need help. And so if she accomplishes nothing else, she wants to try to remove some of the stigmas that surround issues relating to mental health and addiction. And I think that was what motivated her to speak with us.
John, we had on Buster Olney yesterday, and he said it's just a fascinating piece. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it in a couple of minutes at 7 o'clock on ESPN. And we thank you for coming on. Stay safe and have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, guys. Same to you.
Thanks, you got it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, and on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN New York 98.7.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
For more than 80 years, Nissan has been there for you, and now is no different. We're offering flexible payment options for current NMAP customers. Our service departments are here to help. And for future owners, we're now offering more help. Deferred payments for 3 months on 11 models. Plus, we'll cover your payments for up to 2 additional months. Plus, get 0% APR financing for up to 60 months on 10 models. This is help when you need it. Visit NissanUSA.com today to learn more. Nissan, innovation that excites. Offers available to well-qualified buyers on purchase of an eligible 2020 Nissan from new dealer stock when financed through Nissan Motor Acceptance Corporation. Subject to NMAC credit approval and max term limit. Subject to residency restrictions. NMAC special APR cash amount is capped and varies by vehicle from $500 to $2,000, which customer can apply toward up to 2 monthly payments. Customer is responsible for all payments. Delayed payment must begin 90 days from date of contract. Accrual of interest commences from contract date and consumer responsible for accrued interest. Dealer participation may vary. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer details, including list of eligible models and service availability. Offers end 6-1-20.